Hey, everybody. It's the Charlie Kirk Show. My conversation with Dave Rubin, author of Don't Burn This Country. We talk about the left, woke progressives, what we can do to defeat them. Unfortunately, the conversation ends a little abruptly because all of our power went out in our studio while I was talking with Dave. But it's just a great conversation with a phenomenal patriot and American. Email me directly, freedom@charliekirk.com. Support the Charlie Kirk Show at charliekirk.com/support. And come to our Young Women's Leadership Summit at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Our Young Women's Leadership Summit is tpusa.com/YWLS. That's tpusa.com/YWLS. You can email me directly, freedom@charliekirk.com always, and support the Charlie Kirk Show at charliekirk.com/support. At tpusa.com, you can get engaged, get involved, start a high school or college chapter today. That's tpusa.com. I love hearing from you, so please email me your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage. For personalized loan services you can count on, go to andrewandtodd.com, the wonderful andrewandtodd.com. Do not burn this country, everybody. That is the sequel. Is that fair to say?
It is the sequel, and I have to say this is quite an excellent book. Come now that I'm really diving into it here, this is really that,
you actually get the chance to read your own book.
Amazing. Fantastic.
By Dave Rubin, the first book was Don't Burn This Book. Now, the question is, did anyone actually try to burn the book?
Well, we had people that tried to digitally burn it.
Oh, is that right?
You know, the freaks on Reddit and those internet weirdos that coordinate to ruin Amazon reviews and things like that. That's what I would call a digital book burning. I don't know that anyone was out there, you know,
like actually burning the book.
Burning the book.
But now it's Don't Burn the Country, which is surviving and thriving in our woke dystopia by Dave Rubin. We're going to spend the whole hour talking about this and just kind of some news of the day stuff. But let's just dive right into it. Tell us kind of what's in this book. What's the argument you're making?
Well, the argument is we're running out of time and we better figure out what to do here. This is something that you and I have talked about for a long time, Charlie. And on the inscription, is this the one that I wrote to you?
Mm-hmm.
I will even read it to the audience because I know how happy you are about this inscription.
It's one of the great things
on this inscription right over here. This is the book that I sent Charlie a couple weeks ago when the book came out. I wrote, Charlie, okay, fine. You were right. I did become a conservative because years ago we were sitting in a car after an event I think we did at the University of Berkeley where Antifa showed up and people were yelling and pulling fire alarms. And, you know, we're very, very scary. And we were also with that very scary Candace Owens. She freaks people out. And we're in the car after the event and, you know, we're talking about free speech. We actually disagreed on some stuff on stage, but they didn't care. They just want to yell at you and shut you down and the whole thing. And we were in the car on the way back going to dinner and you said, Dave, you will be a conservative one day. And I didn't really push back that hard because I could see the road. The road was being laid right in front of me. I could see it. Now, we can all whittle down the argument of what exactly is a conservative. Yeah. That doesn't really matter. And the beauty of, I would say, what sort of is happening on this new right, as some people are calling it, is that you can agree to disagree on some stuff. And even at the show I did in Phoenix last night at the Improv that you opened for, we got into it with the crowd because I play with the crowd a lot. And people do disagree on things. People have disagreements even when it comes to something like abortion and yet can still all call themselves conservative. That's a beautiful thing. So this book really is about, well, look, the woke have destroyed an awful lot, right?
Yes.
I mean, if you look at what's gone on in these last 5 years, the woke have decimated all of our institutions, education institutions, cultural institutions, entertainment institutions, corporate institutions, etc. So you have to acknowledge that. And as my friend Jordan Peterson would say, you have to give the devil his due. Man, we may not like what they're doing, but they have done it. And you have to actually say, wow, they did something. And that's important to acknowledge. Otherwise, you can't fight against it. But once you acknowledge it, then what can you do so that, as I say in the subtitle, you can thrive?
Yeah, that's what I liked about your title. Is that, I mean, so I'll just give you an example.
Yeah.
I did a poll on Telegram, Instagram, Twitter, every platform I had. I said, agree or disagree that the 1990s was a happier and better place to live. And 97% of people said it was better. Yes,
yeah.
I agree. That makes you pause like, wow, 30 years have gone by, right, since 1992. We have more technology and more connection and all this, yet 97% of people want what we had 30 years ago. Like there's something to that, right?
I guess that would be the ultimate conservative argument. It's almost as if, Charlie, hear me out on this, people before us fought for things and yeah. understood things and knew what they were doing to a certain degree. And perhaps the mistake of our generation, or maybe it's the mistake of the boomers before us really, is that they didn't know how to explain to us, man, there was something good here. And you guys are being handed something, but it's not just that you're handed it. And now you have to protect it like a baby bird. You can't just grab it and crush it. You have to now know that there is something very precious in your hand. And I think, I don't like to do the generational blame. It's too easy to just, lay it all out on
but
the boomers.
But they do it to it's, me.
No, they
That's
do
what
it.
Drives like, me crazy.
Look, there's
you're Gen
plenty.
X, right?
I'm Gen X. I'm okay. 45. So I am right in the middle
so
of Gen X.
You are to blame for nothing.
No, because they didn't give us a chance, man. That's difference.
It's really the forgotten generation.
So wait, how old are you?
28.
You're 28, so you're a millennial, right?
That's correct. I'm on the older end of the millennials, so almost Gen Z.
You're almost Gen Z. Okay, so I'm right in the middle of Gen X, and the boomers, which obviously are before me, they've been holding on for too long. Now, that's not to say that people can't
age. I'm going to get hate mail.
No, listen, I don't mean that. Look, my favorite show is The Golden Girls. I like old people, okay? So this is not about saying old people don't know what they're doing. But at a certain point, a set of people, the world has changed. So think about it this way, as you just said, related to the phones and technology and everything. The world has changed so much in 20 years, right? We did not have iPhones 20 years ago. Year 2000, I think I got my first phone. It was a little, black and white. You could only play Snake on it. Phone. It didn't have number, letters. You just had to text in that old crazy way. The point is the world has changed so much that a set of people who now are still holding on. And what I mean by that are 80-year-old Joe Biden and 106-year-old Nancy Pelosi and all of these people. It's not to say you can't be 80 and be sharp and functional and all of these things, but Gen X, the 45, let's say the 38-year-olds to say mid-50s, late 50s, these are the people who are still in the prime of their life. They've done something.
Yes.
They physically are still in good shape.
Like a
They're
Ron
mentally
DeSantis
still
is a Gen Xer, right?
Ron DeSantis is the prime example.
He's like the
this.
Quintessential.
He's,
right?
I think he's 43. He has an incredible pedigree through the military and everything that he's done. He's the tip of the spear in Florida, freedom, the whole thing. But he's sharp, right? He's like, he's at the top of his game. And I think right now, relative to what we're fighting with a Democrat Party that is just, I mean, they're ruining everything. They are in the last stages of ruining everything. We need some people that are fully ready to fight. That is not to say you can't be 86 and smart.
Course, but
and,
I think there is something to say that like the Democrats are overpopulated with like septuagenarians and octogenarians.
Yeah.
And it's like Schumer's the type and Pelosi, they're kind of like the ranch dressing where it's like best used by. And you're kind of like
that expiration date.
And you're like, this was like 2004.
Well, it's like
you shouldn't get near that.
Charlie, Nancy Pelosi is running again. She's running again. You know that, right?
Yeah, of course. But what else is she supposed to do?
Go be a grandma. Scare the children.
But it's like that there's not as much power. I mean,
no,
like, you know
no,
what I
that's
mean?
What
like,
it is.
You could only be a tyrant to your grandchildren like so much.
The thing is, life has a certain arc, right? And I think I'm not that old yet, but I think that part of the arc is you get to a certain age, and if you're blessed to have children and then grandchildren, that maybe you could realize, hey, at what, however old she is, 82 or whatever it is, with all the power and all the money that she has attained and all of that stuff, maybe it is time to let go and go be a grandmother or go be a mother. But these people can't let go. But really, the point of the book is, all right, they're not going to let go. And it's not really about the age thing. The wokesters are not going to let go of our institutions. They're not letting
That's
go.
It.
They are
yeah.
here to burn the thing down. When people tell you, hey, I'm here to burn the thing down, I believe them.
Yes.
When they say I'm here to ruin America or when they say America's fundamentally evil, I believe people when they tell me that, you know? So the question is, what can you do? There's a lot of things you can do. One of the things that I did is I got out of Cali and I moved to Free State of Florida.
You started a company that has actually made the world a better place.
Yeah.
And I want to tell our audience about that. So we plug 2,000 Mules a lot here on this. I'm in the movie.
Yep.
And
I saw the movie.
Yeah. And
big star.
Thank
by
you.
The way,
yeah, right. I had like four lines.
Big star.
It was kind of like the Costanza. These pretzels are making me thirsty.
These pretzels. pretzels are making me thirsty.
That's right. That's always it. Charlie, pretzels are making me thirsty. And only Metaxas got my Seinfeld references. No, everyone else.
He's good with the references.
He's very good.
Yeah, Prager was not going to get a reference.
That's not. I don't get it. No, see, I'm kidding. Love it. No, but the reason why Mules largely was able to be distributed seamlessly is because the company you founded and merged with Rumble, Locals, which was a Patreon competitor. We use Locals, and it was able to say, like, hey, we have this documentary that we know that it's going to get banned on Facebook and YouTube.
Right.
We didn't even we didn't even bother to do that whole silly fight.
Yeah.
Where it's like we put it on there and we get banned and then we protest it. It's like Dinesh was just like, I'm just going to put it up on Locals and kind of just not go through this entire thing. 30 seconds.
I got to tell you, I'm so thrilled that happened. Everyone knew, hey, there's something wrong with the internet. And then I was like, somebody's got to fix it. Is there someone that can fix it? And then I was like, wait a minute, I'm a guy like me. Why don't I fix it? And I built Locals, and it's been awesome.
The user interface is beautiful.
No, it's really sleek and it's smooth, and we merged with Rumble, and we're building the future of the internet. Why not?
I love it.
You got anything better to do than save the world?
I got a couple. I get my back.
Back fixed.
Hey, everybody. Charlie Kirk here. With the left in a total panic over Twitter and DHS essentially creating their own Ministry of Truth, it is safe to say we're facing the biggest threat to the First Amendment in our lifetime. That's why I'm proud to support Patriot Mobile, America's only Christian conservative cell phone provider. They offer broad nationwide coverage, so you get the same great service without funding the major carriers who donate to the left. Patriot Mobile has plans to fit any budget, and their U.S.-based customer support team provides exceptional customer service. Most importantly, Patriot Mobile shares your values and supports organizations fighting for religious liberty, the rights given to you by God and protected in the Constitution and the sanctity of life. So make the switch right now today. I've made the switch. Our team has made the switch. Do it right now. Go to patriotmobile.com/Charlie or call 972-PATRIOT. Get free activation with the offer code CHARLIE. They also have special discounts for our veteran and first responder heroes. PatriotMobile.com/Charlie or call 972-PATRIOT. That's PatriotMobile.com/Charlie. PatriotMobile.com/Charlie or call 972-PATRIOT. PatriotMobile.com/Charlie. So you spent some time in like high liberal elite society.
I've been to the parties.
Yeah,
man.
I mean, you've been to the parties, and by high, I don't mean like state of mind. Like, we can get into the psychedelic stuff if you want, but
More of a tequila guy.
Yeah, I didn't mean it that way.
Yeah,
but I find it fascinating, the psychology of all this, right?
Yeah.
So your friend Jordan Peterson, someone who I've met a couple times and I've really have a lot of admiration with, he had a fascinating guy in his podcast who talked about this idea of luxury beliefs. I don't know if you've ever heard
this.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That's Rob Henderson.
It was like one of the most fascinating arguments
where
people have traded the need, want, and desire for luxury goods, like, you know, nice watches or a nice car. There's still a desire for that. But kind of the true currency of the ruling class is like, what's your luxury belief?
Yes.
Can you expand on that? Do you find that to be true?
So I do. I've met Rob once. That's who you're referring to on Jordan's podcast. And it's an interesting set of ideas that I think is very connected to what liberalism has become, unfortunately. And I always have to say unfortunately because, you know, my first book was a defense of classical liberalism, right, which is a defense of all of the ideas that America was founded upon. It is very hard for me in 2022 to say I am a liberal. It's somewhat maddening. I suppose if we were at Oxford with some well-educated people, it would be a little bit easier, but it can be difficult from sort of a broadcaster point of view. But the idea of luxury beliefs is that once the world has been set up so that you're given everything, which is what so much of Americana is about, because it's been so freaking good here for so long, because so many people have fought and died to make it that way, that then the liberals, in essence, or the elites, can sort of just believe all of these crazy things that are not true, but it sort of just makes them kind of feel like they're very evolved and good. So a very obvious one in our day now would be all of this gender stuff.
Yes.
That you can sort of just believe that you, just because you're biologically one thing, that you actually are something else, and that if we could only create all of the conditions for you to become that other thing, that you would live a happier life and it would be more evolved if you could aid in all of these other people doing it. One of the other things that Jordan talks about related to that even meaning the trans issue, is that, you know, first off, he always says that he has great sympathy for people that have gender dysphoria, which is that you are biologically one thing and then you, but you believe you are the opposite sex in your mind. So there's a mind-body disconnection there. And he's a clinical psychologist, so he has sympathy for that condition in and of itself. But one of the things he talks about is that just because you have that condition, if you think that purely by physically changing your body, you are going to solve all of your problems, most likely it ain't going to be the case. And we know that. I mean, now there are studies after studies, yes, proving this. Abigail Schreier, who I'm sure you know, she wrote also Irreversible Damage.
That's right. But yeah.
I mean, there are many studies about this that people think, oh, if I can just make these changes, then I'll be better. But, you know, it comes from within, not necessarily the external stuff. So that's sort of what a luxury belief is. It's that the liberals all seem to believe things like, if we just say the right thing all the time, if we just feel the right way and make people think that everything's kind of okay. But in the real world, when you really have to,
yes,
pay bills, when you really have to make things happen, when you have
the
to fight for what is yours.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, those pesky shackles. When in the real world, when you have to go get yours, when you have to fight for something, fight for freedom, fight for whatever it is that is within you that you're trying to attain, you don't have time for that stuff. So we have this whole crew of wokesters right now who've been handed the world and they're finding petty problems to fight about while,
yes,
they burn the whole thing down.
I don't even think, this is my question, how much of it do they actually believe, right? So like a luxury belief would, yeah, be some person in Harvard being like, yeah, I think monogamy is ending and, yeah, polyamory. And then you ask them, right, like, what are you going to do with your life? Well, I'm going to get married and have children and be loyal to my husband. Like, really? So do you think polyamory really is going to be?
Right.
You know, or like, well, I think I defund the police. Like, oh, really? You live in Greenwich?
Right.
Like,
right,
you know, you have turrets when you go to Starbucks, right?
They keep snipers,
I know.
On the Starbucks in
seriously,
Greenwich.
Like, if anyone walks out of line in Greenwich, it's like,
no, it's these crazy, look, why does Pelosi, why does Biden, Kamala Harris, why do all of these people who are super wealthy, who live in elite communities,
yes,
and then they go for defunding the police, and who does it hurt? We know it hurts the,
yes,
inner city people. It hurts the people of Chicago. It hurts the people of Minneapolis. And then, of course, they always figure out another way to blame. Then it's still someone else's,
yeah,
fault beyond their own fault. But that sort of luxury, like, I've got it easy.
That's exactly
and now I'm
right.
just going to sell a set of ideas to a group of people who don't really understand the issue.
So
like the polyamory thing is an interesting one because it's like at some level when you're in your early 20s, it sort of makes sense. Like, just live for however you want, live for the day, do whatever you want, give yourself pleasure at all times. Like there's some piece of being a human that at a certain level it makes sense. And then, but you realize over time that actually being with one person is pretty good.
That's right.
And building a life with a family is pretty good. And that is what is sustainable. That is what allows you to hand something to your children.
And so what I love about this though, Dave, and I don't even want to get into it. I don't like the disagreements of like what is a conservative or not. What really matters though is like we believe in consent of the governed, separation of powers, the Constitution, freedom of speech. We believe there's something worth conserving and protecting. And then let's go defeat these like degenerate woke people.
Yes.
Like that's the mission statement. Right?
Yes. We can set aside whatever the differences
are. Which
is
so minute and so irrelevant.
Charlie, some people on the more libertarian side are going to want no taxes. Some conservatives want a little bit of taxes, but they don't want a lot of federal,
yep,
taxes. We could put all of that aside to save the country.
To
right
save
now.
The republic.
Let's just save the republic. And then we can hash out our differences after,
yes,
right? We can. And by the way, you know, I mentioned this on the show last night at the live event that, you know, when it comes to this Roe v. Wade thing, look, the pro-life thing to conservatives, this is like the top of the thing. Mm-hmm. It's about life, conserving,
yes,
life. So this is the top of the thing. But two interesting things happened. One of them I didn't know until the show last night. So in Florida, where I now live, a few weeks ago, they passed a 15-week ban on abortion. Now, 15 weeks, that's 3.5 months. That's more, even though I have some willingness for a few weeks, that's further than I would go. I would go maybe to 12, okay? Now, I get what I purely get the pro-life position on this. I'm not denying that when the sperm meets the egg, it's a life, all of that stuff. Okay, fine. But think about this. Florida, which is thought of as this red, right-wing, Ron DeSantis state, they did a 3.5-month abortion law, and nobody cared. I don't mean nobody cared in such a glib way. What I mean is they passed it, and it was thought of as a compromise, and it wasn't controversial. It wasn't on the front, mm-hmm, page of the New York Times or Washington Post. It was like, oh, here's a compromise. So that shows you that red states are willing to compromise. Because if it was a purely red state position, they'd have no abortion, or it would have the most minor mm-hmm. exclusions, right? So that's what Florida did. Someone told me this, and you can confirm it for me, last night. I didn't know this till after the show, that Arizona, I think, did the exact same thing.
Very similar.
15
yes.
weeks.
Yeah.
So think about that. You've got two states. Arizona, I consider a red state, and I think it will get redder. I think you're going to be okay here.
We got to fix it.
You got some things to do, but I think you're going to be okay. But the point is that the red states are showing a willingness to compromise. It's the other side that's not showing willingness. When you tell me, when 49 or whatever it is, Democrat senators, everyone except for Manchin, says, no, we are going, not codify, it's worse than codify. Yeah, codifying Roe v. Wade would just push it to the federal government. They were going far worse. They were saying unlimited abortions at any time up until the day of birth. That is bananas. So who's willing to compromise? It's clearly the Republicans, the conservatives, who are saying, hey, we may not like it, but we're not up in arms over this
amount
of weeks.
What do you think that tells you about the modern conservative movement?
Well, what it tells you is there's an implicit understanding that we live in a country with people that disagree with us, and we are not here to make everyone bow to us. It's a very mature way to look at the world,
like how
right?
Should govern,
it's,
right?
It's almost like how we should govern or how we should live, right? I mean, do you know all of your neighbor's beliefs, and do you make sure that they bow to the whims of Charlie Kirk every morning?
And isn't it more sustainable to like not want to actually know that, though, right? I mean, it would drive you mad.
It would completely drive you mad, right? You would never want to know it. You wouldn't want to know it even in your own family. You don't necessarily need to know or constantly be focused on everyone's political beliefs related to everything else. But they've created a cult-like atmosphere around politics. And that's what we have to fight. So that's why the Roe v. Wade thing, to me, kicking it back to the states, putting aside abortion specifically, the idea that the states will have more power and you can live in a place that is more aligned with your views. How freaking beautiful is that? And if abortion to you is the number one issue, if that is your number one issue and you live in Alabama and you want everyone to have unlimited abortions, then move to Cali. That's a system that shows flexibility. That shows a system that shows an ability to be amenable and changeable. That's pretty freaking great.
Yeah, so, but what we're seeing, as you well know, is the opposite, right? Which is like this imperialistic mindset from the left, which is, okay, we have unlimited abortions in the Bronx, but like someone in Missouri doesn't agree with me.
And we better stop that from happening.
And we have to like bring people with guns. We hate guns unless we have guns, right?
they love their guns.
To Branson, Missouri or whatever. Yeah. And like we're going to paratroop in to make sure everyone agrees with us. Like what is in that mindset, right?
This is where we could roll this back to where we were going a few minutes ago related to Jordan. But, you know, Nietzsche warned, of course, you know, God is dead, mm-hmm. but it was a warning, not a promise. It was a warning. Like if you remove God from everything, if you remove something bigger than us from everything, you leave people with the need for belief. It is so fundamental to the human experience. And then they will fill that with something. And that's what the woke did. And that's why earlier when I said that you have to give them credit, you have to give the devil his due, they found something that somehow became so all-encompassing to a certain set of people. And then unfortunately, the boomers that we were talking about before, they did not know how to defend the republic. They did not know how to defend their beliefs.
Do you think there was a mass underestimation of the woke?
Yes, because you and I know this really well, Charlie. 5-7 years ago, when we were going to college events, right? We'd go there and they'd be pulling fire alarms and they'd be screaming at us and yelling. And all we'd be going up there is talking about free speech.
And disagreeing.
We would always, not only that, I will give you credit because you did it even before me. You would always say at the events, if you disagree with us, you come to the mic first, mm-hmm. right? So, and then I've always done that at all my events since then. But that's what we were doing. And I would post those videos, or we'd post Turning Point videos that we would do. And I'd see in the comments, a lot of people would say, you know, these are just kids. And when they get out to the real world, what do they always say? When they get out to the real world, the real world will show them. But the real world folded like a wet paper bag, right?
Totally.
So what does that tell you about the people that were in charge of the real world? They did not. And again, this is where I put the fault at sort of the liberal establishment, the machinery of the liberals. They didn't know how to defend anything. They put tolerance at such a high level that, well, you cannot be tolerant of intolerance. And they just allowed it in. And as I say in the book, it's basically the movie Alien. And the alien is rampaging throughout the ship. He's killing everybody, right? The alien is just mauling everybody. There's death and blood and goo and gore everywhere. But the doctor on the ship, if you remember, 1977, the original Alien, the doctor admires the alien. And why does he admire the alien? Because the alien's doing exactly what it set out to do, and it's remorseless, and it knows what it wants to do, and it's accomplishing it. So he doesn't like what it's doing. He'd prefer that not everyone be dead, but he understands this thing is something. And that's what I'm saying. You have to understand it before you fight it.
What else do we have to understand about this woke pathogen that you don't think most conservatives?
Well, the key thing is you cannot, we have to get past the point of endlessly trying to rationalize it. Rationalizing with it. So I see a lot of our friends all day long on Twitter still, but they're hypocrites and I can make fun of them because they do this and that. And it's like, yes, there is mockery that is sometimes worthy of it. And we can expose them. But really what the book is about is now what do you do to separate from them? So A, whether it's what I said before, move to a state that's more in line with your values and defend that state. B, don't put your time and money into the institutions that are coming for your life. Mm-hmm. So you do not have to go $100,000 into debt to get a degree in, say, lesbian archery. This is not very valuable in real life, except in a very, there's maybe a very small amount of people that can use lesbian archery as a worthwhile.
Is that a growing industry? That
there's a certain set of people that it's valuable for. But if you just stop thinking, for example, how about you cancel Disney Plus? How about you cancel Netflix, which I've done? How about you get out of the system and then start building new things? You build things like Turning Point Buildings, or you build things like Locals Build Things, or you build things like Daily Wire, which is putting $100 million into kids programming.
Yes.
And if we actually start doing those things, you know what also happened? We'll kind of feel good about
Let me ask you something, and I totally agree, but I'm going to act like I don't because I think it's more interesting. Okay. So like we kind of go through this kind of moral high ground of cancel culture.
Yes.
Right. For the last couple of years. Like we hate cancel culture. How dare you? And like now we're saying we should cancel Disney Plus. How do we square that?
Well, fundamental difference, because I'm not trying to cancel a person. So I'm not trying. So Reed Hastings is the CEO of Netflix.
Of Netflix, yeah.
This is a terrible guy, this guy. He funded almost all of the ads to take out Larry Elder in California.
$100 million.
I mean, the ads against, every time you opened up YouTube over the summer, all of the ads against our friend Larry Elder were basically Larry Elder's
and
white
supremacist. And it
actually
said paid by Reed Hastings on the bottom.
You're with me, Charlie Kirk. Okay, so now I am not saying fire Reed Hastings. I'm not saying destroy Reed Hastings. Uh-huh. I'm not saying show up to Reed Hastings' house. That would be cancel culture. What I'm saying is you don't have to fund your own demise. Canceling Netflix, right? So right now, the only reason I watch Netflix is because Seinfeld's on there. And as I said during the show last night, I just have to figure out how to get Seinfeld on a server in my house, and then I'm out. But I did get rid of Disney Plus.
You know, I have
Plus
all the original DVDs.
You got them, so I just need to burn them from you. And then
I don't know how to play a DVD. Would I throw it at the TV? It's like a frisbee.
I don't know. You got tech. Look, there's a whole room of people.
I know, but I don't think we have a DVD player.
Jeez.
Everything's on the cloud now. I have these irrelevant old frisbees.
All right. Well, we'll figure that out. But the point is there's a fundamental difference between trying to destroy people personally and doing what the free market dictates, which is, hey, I don't have to give money to things that are evil. So Disney Plus, I canceled it. Now, is there a little piece of me that would like to watch Obi-Wan next week? There is a little piece of me, but I cannot fund these things anymore. It is a joy to me that Disney has lost $41 billion in 6 weeks because one man stood up against the mouse, obviously Ron DeSantis. So that's different than cancel culture, which is going after specific people and trying to get people fired. Yes. That's very different than taking responsibility for your life, saying, hey, there's a company over there that does things I don't like. They're not going to get my time, my attention, my money. So I don't see I know a lot of people see that tension there. I don't see it.
No, I agree. I think that there is a lot of nuance there. At the same time, I think that some conservatives don't even like, hey, I don't want to punish Disney because it feels like I'm doing the Louis C.K. thing.
You're on the endless slide to hell with them.
Yeah, and I think also the difference is also, okay, there are some extraordinary circumstances where people should be probably canceled from life, like Bill Cosby or whatever, right? But what happened is that we're going to now cancel Dave Chappelle because he says a joke we don't like.
Yeah.
And so the question is, what is the criteria as well? But you're also talking about like consumer purchasing decisions.
All do it, right? We all make discerning decisions in our life. Who do you want to associate with? Yes. Who do you want to be friends with? Where do you want to
live? Where do your dollars go? Right.
This is what we do as human beings. This is what freedom's all about. So it's to me, the idea of making decisions that are in line with the way you view the world is, in some ways, the reverse of cancel culture, because then you're supporting someone else that you're actually lifting up, as opposed to something that is actually trying to take you down. So I don't have a problem with that. Otherwise, you know, you're literally funding people to take away your freedoms, in essence. And I just won't be part of that.
Yeah, that's such a good point. And conservatives need to get used to rewarding the good guys and punishing the bad guys, especially monetarily.
And by the way, Charlie, you know, the other piece of this is that we all do things somewhat inconsistently, right? So if you have kids, I get it. You want your kids to be able to see a Disney movie, you know, what's a classic?
Cinderella.
So I get it. We all have these negotiations that we have to go through. But could you have the VHS or DVD copy of Cinderella and not fund the operation today that is trying to tell your son that he's a girl? You probably can figure out a way.
Or we could strip Disney of their copyright protections and open it up, which Congress, it's coming.
How about
up
take away those extra benefits, the tax benefits they've got in Orlando?
That's part of it. Well, yeah. And then the other one is that they get a special carve out in Congress. Dave asked where we are streaming. Rumble.com, R-U-M-B-L-E.com. And you sold your company to Rumble. We kind of merged.
We merged. I did not take cash. You know what I did? I took stock. And you know why?
Smart.
I took stock? Because I believe in this company. And I could have walked with cash. We had cash offers. And I thought, no, I want to be in this fight for the long haul. And I think we're going to change. I honestly believe I know we're changing the internet, but I think we're going to change the world.
I'm a partner in Rumble too. And I believe in it. I think it's doing a great job. And I think it could solve a lot of our problems. The Mules example is how all of a sudden you don't have to go through the typical gatekeepers. And so something you identified, I think it's super interesting. It's a topic we haven't touched on a lot, which is how should conservatives process big companies making it harder to live a conservative life?
Yeah.
So BlackRock comes in. BlackRock, the $10 trillion company, right?
Yeah.
They come in and buy a bunch of single family homes and they rent them back to us. I thought that's conservative, Dave. Shouldn't we support that? Free markets.
The old free market argument. Look, I believe in free markets and I believe in capitalism. And capitalism and free markets offer the best sort of messy system. Now, are there going to be bad actors in any open system? Of course there are. Are they going to be greedy people in an open system? Of course. But if the alternative from an open system is a centralized, controlled, completely controlled system, we have a problem. Now, we have some version of both of those happening right now, right? We have a centralized system and then capitalism that is being usurped by a bunch of bad actors. But what we were talking about during the break was that I decided about 6 months ago, right after the recall, which failed, and I campaigned for Larry Elder. I fought the good fight. I fought the good fight. I mean, I tried to save California. It did not work. These people want more punishment. They want to go down with the ship. And, you know, it's sort of thank you,
it's
sir.
Like
may
the
I have
George
another
Costanza going down with the ship.
They're right. You know, he's all in and he's going down with the ship. I love that you can do the Seinfeld references.
Not
you
that
really
there's anything
can't
wrong
not
with
that
it.
There's anything
yada, yada,
wrong
yada.
With it.
I've just so you know, as a total interruption, I've never met anyone better than me.
On the Seinfeld side of references.
Only Metaxas, but I run circles around him. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
We're going to write it off, Charlie.
We're going to what?
We're going to write it off.
I don't know that one.
Off what? You don't know what a write-off is.
Oh, okay. All right. What do you mean a write-off?
But they do, and they're the ones who are writing it off. It's my favorite line.
Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com, and support The Charlie Kirk Show at charliekirk.com/support. Thank you so much for listening. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.